The Star Wars Battlefront Entertainment Pack includes all new, limited edition, lighter, slimmer white PSP with Darth Vader art and Star Wars Battlefront Renegade Squadron game. Play on widescreen LCD or on any TV with video out.
Hello and welcome to the GFW Radio Podcast. This is the podcast for October 25th, 2007. Yeah, that sounded... Sean's looking at me like, why are you doing your FM radio DJ thing?
Hey!
What? I'm floundering already.
No, I was just noticing how well you handle it.
Oh.
You got the date down.
I
always have to look at the calendar to know what day it is.
Actually, we should be confused by the date because we're like 4 days late here. I apologize. We were on deadline. I'm sorry. Give us a break. We had a very tough schedule this month. We barely got through it, but we're done now. It's Thursday afternoon. We have a free day. We got Robert Ashley here again.
Howdy.
What's this business Howdy. About a free day?
Well, I mean, like, we're not all busy for once. It means we actually have the time to podcast. So we're doing it, and you should get it today. In fact, we're going to actually post it the same day we record. That's how live this is. Wow!
It's pretty awesome.
So introduce yourselves.
Ryan Scott.
Sean Malloy.
Krill.
Krill.
Sorry to introduce, Sean. But Robert Ashley.
I am Robert Ashley again, who once again brought cookies.
Yes.
If you keep this up, we're just going to invite you back every week.
But the thing is, I'm just going to make you guys my human veal. So get fat. And then I'm going to lock you in a basement for a couple months.
Good luck getting Ryan Scott fat.
Oh, you sound like just the person to review Manhunt for us.
We were just talking about our weight before we turned the mics on because we had kind of a girl moment.
Do these pants make me look fat? Does my butt look big?
No, but, you know, Ryan Scott, weighing in at, can we say this? Is this too personal for the podcast audience to know?
I think I weigh, well, to the best of my knowledge, last time I was weighed, I'm 136 pounds.
That's a fucking skinny man.
But that's up from, you said, a year ago?
Is that with clothes on?
Which, like, I think so.
Well, you've been bantamweight boxing for how many years, though?
The hell?
Man, I believe
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you
could have
gone with that. Yeah,
like you could have been like, I'm trying to keep it down. I got to get back to 110. I got about 2 weeks left of eating
training.
Subway sandwiches.
Yeah, I don't think artists. I ever hit 120 until well after high school.
Wow.
So,
but I love how for a woman it would be terrible for someone to say that they weighed over 130 pounds, but for a guy it's like 130 pounds.
Yeah.
God.
Weakling.
Yeah.
I can't do anything to get under 175. Nothing I do.
I'll
not eat for 2 weeks. I'll be like jogging every day, and then I'll finally get on the scale. And I'm like, this is it. I did it. And it's like, wah, wah, you gained 5. Fuck!
Does it make you sad that I can eat anything all day forever and not gain a pound?
No, but see, it determines your lifespan, your metabolism. So if your metabolism is pop, 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 that's you're like a mosquito. You're going to die in like 5 years.
Oh.
It's true.
So if you got the slow metabolism, you might be big, but if you can avoid the diabetes, you're
that
good
was
for a long
time. Right.
Actually, part of the Wang Wang story that you cut me off on.
Yeah.
And that
what?
Was, I can't get back to it. I actually had a lot of people write me saying that they wanted to hear the full story of Wang Wang.
Of Wang Wang.
And I had many others offer to stealth edit the Wikipedia entry on Wang Wang for me. But the thing about him is that he doesn't sleep, much like a hummingbird. He doesn't sleep, but he hibernates nightly. So there you go.
He doesn't sleep. Full on hibernation.
Wait, what's the difference between sleep and hibernation?
What is the difference?
Oh, it's much deeper.
It's much deeper, and it allows you to conserve. I mean, sleep, you use up a lot more calories and energy than you would while hibernating. Hibernating is like near coma state, so, you know, your pulse and everything slows down radically. So, yeah, hummingbirds are actually much the state that they're in on a nightly basis is much closer to hibernation.
So Ryan's like a hummingbird.
Yeah.
You stop aging, basically.
You know, I saw an article on the front page of the SF Chronicles website yesterday, front page news article that said that there were new studies that linked lack of sleep to irritability. Really?
Whoa.
Wow. How much do you get paid for that study?
Is that The Onion?
No, you are kidding me. I sent that article to everybody. You're not going to believe this. If you don't sleep, you're going to be irritable.
Lots of money poured into researching the obvious these days.
Yeah.
I saw a news story recently that was some study that proved that, guys tend to go for attractive women.
Oh, I saw that article too. Uh-huh. Right.
And then conversely, it said that women tend to go for signs of wealth. I saw that same thing. It's like, wow, that's really insightful.
Really?
Thank you, science.
They like wealthy guys?
Yeah.
Women are so shallow. It's, we could say that. There's nobody, no females listen to this podcast.
There are probably one or two.
You think?
Probably. Don't you think?
Nice. If you're a female and you listen to this podcast,
start an indignant forum thread.
Send me a personal email.
If you're female and you listen to this podcast, I'm sorry.
Sorry. Just apologize.
Robert apologizes on behalf of all men. Do we have anything to talk about this week, or are we just going to ramble?
Playing plenty of games.
We have.
Talk about the game.
Wondering what we're doing, talking about weight.
Yeah, Sean's looking all disgusted, like he's going to rip off his mic. Waste of my time this week.
No.
Can I point out, though, that you've made a very strong policy over all the time I've known you, I don't know how many years that is now, of never wearing You one day you said, like, this body is not for sale.
Yeah, I didn't say it like that.
Yeah, you did, and that's when I was trying to pay you. And today you're wearing a Team Fortress 2 shirt. What's that about?
I am. I got it. After, one of the few game shirts I've ever worn, usually what happens when you visit a studio or something, or when a studio visits us here, they'll bring a shirt or so. Hence the joke about certain people in the industry whose closets are filled with nothing but a different game shirt for each day of the week.
Mm-hmm. That is a cool shirt, though.
And I try not to rock name brands. That's how I said it. I didn't say, this body is not for sale.
I try not to billboard.
So if you talk about I'm preempting you. If we talk about Team Fortress 2 today.
Because on the front, look, there's nothing. It doesn't say
anything. I know,
that's
really cool.
There's
that's
just
a nice shirt.
An illustration, nice illustration.
That would look like a cool shirt even if you didn't know.
But I like that you picked the spy one, because I can tell you picked it not because of its aesthetic qualities, but because you identify as a spy.
That's
in the
who
game.
I am, man. A whole part of picking those classes, and I hope people. We don't usually refer people to our magazine, but I hope they do get to read the verses in story in the current issue. And that's the issue with Borderlands and Brothers in Arms on it, because we have some fun
on sale now
talking about
$4.99.
What sorts of people pick each class? Yeah.
So if we talk about this today, I'm going to feel like you're talking about it because Valve gave you that
gave
shirt.
Gave me the shirt. Otherwise, yeah. Because, it was crazy. Like, if you look back a few weeks ago, I had nothing to say if anything, about Team Fortress 2. And as soon as I got this
today, you got the shirt?
With this shit on my back, I want to talk. That's why I didn't want to hear about your weight. I don't care how fucking much you weigh. I got to tell you about how good the spy class is in Team Fortress 2.
Because you got a t-shirt to say it.
I do. No, it's funny because you're not the first to point it out, everyone's. Because I make a lot of
you
times,
do.
Though,
you make
the game
point
shirts are fucking hideous. Because
they are. Like the ones Ryan usually wears.
They have like a wraparound image. It's the old...
Ryan's unzipping on Mike.
There's the shirt I got on.
That's a game, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a shirt for WTF.
Work time.
That's actually a pretty cool shirt, too.
That's a cool shirt.
I'm just
impressed that the mic picked up the sound.
You know, that was awesome.
Just for the record, that was a sweatshirt, not pants. That's later.
After the break.
I thought you're also taking care to note that while you're wearing a sweatshirt, you're not wearing sweatpants, which is a sign of class. Like, speaking of that, I knew this kid in high school where every day he had a different, what the fuck band was it? Was it Megadeth? Yeah, he had a different Megadeth. No, Testament. He had a different Testament shirt
better.
For every day of the week and a different color sweatpants. But it was like, gray, dark gray, light gray, navy
to
blue.
Match the different.
Yeah, so every day of the week his uniform would be a pair of sweatpants and a Testament t-shirt. Yeah. But those are like the nasty ones, especially, if you get a shirt and there's like just some big loud graphics and they wrap around the size, and it all goes back to the Hot Topic silk, pseudo silk things where you got Spider-Man or Todd McFarlane's dragon kind of reaching around the broad swath of your hairy back and breathing flames out your other armpit. That's dressed to win.
Oh, wait, I have one on, too.
Now that I think of it.
What does this say?
You got your logging camp here?
Yeah, Eastvale Logging Camp. It's a WoW shirt.
Oh, okay. I thought that was just like some thrift, the kind of thing you get in a thrift store.
Oh, really?
Like, Well, you know, it's
no,
just
the
some,
outer shirt is.
Actually, that would
have
been...
The flannel shirt I'm wearing is from a thrift store.
Well, no, nowadays, they took that whole thrift store, like, mindset, you know, kind of like when grunge
yeah, right.
became popular, and you go to Target and they have shirts with, it's supposed to be ironic prints on
yeah,
them.
Yeah,
the
sure.
same way you see people wearing, like, Chairman Mao shirts and shit.
Right.
You're like, do you even know who the fuck that is? Like, there's nothing ironic or funny about that. Like, that's a piece of shit on your shirt. You think it's funny? I totally want to tell people that, you know? And then, oh, well, I got it at Target. It's funny. Like, I got this other shirt, the Hammer and Sickle on it.
You should hand him the little red book. Read this.
Yeah.
You're like,
let's talk about the Cultural Revolution.
I didn't know you were such a fervent anti-communist.
Yeah.
Dude, that's not anti-communism.
You're like, the Nixon of 1UP.
Although, I'm glad to see you approach politics with the same console war mentality. against dictators, actually, that kill millions of people with their
I feel like
ridiculous.
The console war stuff and politics have a lot in common, just the way that people approach it and the way that they fight each other about it in ridiculous and stupid ways.
I think so.
You're kind of right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Take a look on any message board, such as the what is it now 10-page thread on 1UP forums, where you've been in heated debate.
I really do like that now that the PS3 Xbox 360 war is so heated that PC, we're just kind of out of it. It used to be kind of like PC versus console in general, and that's still around. But the bigger war definitely, to me, feels like it's those two consoles.
Right.
Those people can't get along.
With the Wii coming into play, too, at times.
Yeah.
But it's very nice to be...
We're just sort of on the side.
Outside of that.
Laughing at everyone.
Because us, we'll play console. It seems weird. I mean, I know there are people who just play PC and play PC exclusively, but it always seems it's such an easy move to say, hey, there is an entire variety of game experiences available on consoles that you can't get on PC, and get a console and play those too, you know? Mm-hmm. But we don't see so much of the, you know, we used to have the internal thing. Is it AMD or Intel, or I'm an ATI guy or an NVIDIA? People always find some point of difference to identify themselves with.
Mac
and
PC.
To build an identity around. But Robert, you were in this thread.
Well, it wasn't just one thread. It was just, for some reason this week, I don't know, you ever have one of those days where you look at the message boards and after about 10 minutes, you're about to have a fucking heart attack from all the stupidity on display? Yeah.
That's known as rage stroke.
Oh, God. Something about reviews this week, people just freaked out. Specifically, Ratchet and Clank for PlayStation 3, of all things.
Mm-hmm. Because it's an exclusive, it's a platform exclusive game.
Yeah, but I just
from a best-selling series, you know, and mm-hmm. it's rightfully regarded, you know, as being something to look forward to.
Just the first one, and I loved it.
But the fact that it's a Sony exclusive, I think, has something to do with
it. Yeah, well, but people were freaking out over an 8.5, I guess.
What?
Which is a phenomenal score.
As being low? Too
as
low?
Being, yeah, way too low. It really.
Wait, who? You mean our score? 1UP.com?
The 1UP score. And then I guess GameSpot gave it a 7.5, and that sent people into some sort of death spiral of suicide
people
watch.
People jumping off bridges.
Yeah.
7.
But I just don't understand why people develop these, like, hardcore preperceptions, preconceptions of what a game is going to be like.
Having read these reviews or this thread, let me guess. People felt we scored it low because we're anti-Sony biased.
A lot of people.
Probably some of that, yeah.
A lot of people. But a lot of it was just, you know, rage about you know, this reviewer doesn't get it, or why didn't they post one of the higher reviews from EGM or blah, blah,
who
blah.
Who reviewed it?
Who was the 1UP review?
I believe that was
I didn't follow it.
Joe Rubicki in that one?
I think you're right. Yeah, that's right.
Who used to work for Official PlayStation Magazine.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that guy didn't know anything.
Yeah, he's really anti-Sony.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you, I do believe, you know, not saying one way or the other. I mean, he has a record for being super, especially fond of games for Sony systems. I mean, if you do look at, you know, I remember comparing, like, the OPM scores to EGM scores or directly in EGM when you have all three of them. Mm-hmm. As I recall, he would, you know, very often be the one to give the highest score.
He has a Sony tattoo on his ass.
But I'm not saying, no, I'm not
for
saying.
Real? Is that for real? No.
Yeah, I've seen it. I'm making it.
You snorted crit.
I triangle, the square, the circle, the X.
Oh, God. I don't know. I just get really frustrated when I imagine that the audience doesn't really, like, give a shit about anything you're writing, that all they care about
all
is
that
this
number.
Validating.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask, did they bring up any of the points in the text, or were they, it was all just focused on the number?
I mean, a few people were, and there was definitely some fighting in the thread from people who were thinking that it was ridiculous, but it was just a lot of, you know, freaking out over the number. And, and the Gaff thread was, it was somebody who posted like an EGM scores thread, and that was the ultimate sort of, if you want to.
See, I don't,
it had
I
GFW
don't
scores too, but let's point out that no one even gave a shit. No one said a word about our scores.
That's because our scores were just perfect. There was nothing.
And I think the people, the conversation is really coming from the points of contention, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like they go in and you say there's, and of course it was just the scores, you know, there was no text to accompany it, and you, and they go in and say these are good scores or these are bad scores, and you know that doesn't mean, hey, an 8.5, that's a that's a good score and a positive score, that's a, if a high score, what that means is I approve of this score or I don't approve of it, and in almost all instances these are scores for games that aren't available to the public, so how they're determining whether or not they approve of the scores is a mystery.
Yeah.
You know, in part, the mystery we're trying to get to, you know, we're trying to resolve right now. Mm-hmm. And just, yeah, then, but as a sideline, more, that stuff is, it's just there. It's, you know, it's kind of one of those things in life you shake your head at and say, wow. But they've opened up these discussions that are more interesting, I think, on, thanks, Ryan, on, on the nature of reviews and what people expect from reviews. And I think there's more to be said there because it's not us just sort of, you know, pointing a, wetting our finger and sticking it in the air and trying to figure out why people act. I don't know why people sound like they're ready to fight. They're ready to fight you over, in a parking lot of the Raiders Coliseum. Over,
it's funny. It's one thing. It's one thing if you're the developer, right, and you're pissed, and you have a vested interest in the review. But it is incredible to see people get so angry about a review that. Why do they care so much? Why
I mean,
especially if they haven't played the game yet. Yeah, that's a kind of a weird thing. They're like validating your system thing.
Yeah.
And well, when there's fanboyism involved, it's obvious. It's just like an 8.5 or whatever you perceive as low is obviously a blow against the system that you're supporting no matter what. It's damaging your system and ruining its chances in this horrible, horrible console war that's going on. So that's where that comes from, if it is fanboyism. But
and I often wonder, do reviews even really have that big of an impact on sales? Especially like a OneUp.com review of a game? Is that
people argue that they do.
Well, hey, I'll point out again, like if reviews, if review scores or whatever influence sales, games like Psychonauts or whatever would have been much more popular.
Okami would have sold a billion. You know?
Sure.
At the same time, though, it's hard to say, again, there are games like Bioshock or something, and you sort of want to think that the uniformly positive, glowing reviews might have contributed to that. But I think what's more, though, is just the discussion. Word of mouth, people telling friends, you know, what's going on now. Or they don't even ask. It's unsolicited. When someone comes to you and starts talking about a game, and you haven't even asked them, say, hey, tell me something to play this week. Then it's just contagious. You say, oh, okay, I want to play that, you know. Or you go online and every other thread is about Bioshock or every other thread's about whatever, Portal. Then you just say, I want to get in on it. So I think that, the review scores don't matter. We know that they matter to an extraordinary extent to PR people and publishers.
Right,
and they're just actively doing everything they can to get the highest, highest score, you know, recommending to reviews editors who should review the game, what the qualifications are.
But this is completely tied into certain facts like that the PR people themselves will get bonuses based on how the game does on a site like Metacritic.
Right. Many, not all of them, so we can't
not
say everyone. But,
it's
but
not
many,
a blanket
many,
thing.
Many publishers, PR teams do receive bonuses based on the Metacritic score for the game. We've talked about that before. We've said it's insane because the assumption there is that the PR person is influencing the score. Because it's like if it's a reward, you have to be rewarded for something you did. Well, of course, we don't want to think that they had anything to do with the scores, you know. And of course, when they recommend who reviews things, we just ignore that. A side effect of that is a lot of people talk about how, oh, well, we want a fair review. We want the best review. We want the review from someone who just loves this series or this game. And that's why you always hear this talk about fans of the genre and this and that, you know, in these reviews. And think about that for a minute. The downside is that your line of thought is entirely in line with the desires of a PR team and a marketing team, because they very much say, hey, make sure, you know, just do us a favor. Make sure whoever reviews this just loves this series. They love the last one. They love, you know, movies that are similar in content and scope to this thing. And so by saying that, you do, for whatever, for better or worse, you want the exact same thing as the marketing team. Another thing to keep in mind is that if someone reviews the game and they might disagree with you, I don't think that that should be threatening to you. Personally, I don't believe we should look at reviews and say, this had better confirm, you know, this had better be provide further ammunition for me in the arguments I have online with other people that don't agree with me. So I can say, well, look, the guys at GFW agree with me. What do you say about that? Well, what if we totally disagree with you, but we make it very clear why we disagree with you? And in reading that and in listening to that, you can say, hey, at least I understand their point of view. It's kind of like arguing with the spouse or something, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, hey, we agree to disagree, but I at least understand where that's coming from. But then you also know by reading that, you know, we often talk about the difference between Consumer Report and critique, but I think a good critique will have a recommendation implicit in it. In the same way that if, you know, if you're really thinking through something and talking about it and you're, you know, you're engaging it thoroughly, it's going, you're going to read it and say, hey, if this person's point of view seems similar to my own, it's going to recommend itself to you, you know?
Well, I mean, that's like a critic in any entertainment form.
Exactly, exactly. That's the thing. It's like this whole notion that game – see, this. There's always this talk. What's a game – what should games journalism be? Or what should – you know, in this case, it's criticism. The two are very different. Journalism is not, you know, reviewing.
Right.
What should it be? And I don't – it's kind of puzzling to me at times when we have these big, you know these chin-stroking discussions on it, because it's like, well, why don't we ever just look at what works elsewhere? And maybe it, and I think it does work the same. I don't think we have to rewrite the playbook, you know? And instead of just writing these lists of, you know, here's a list of good things and here's a list of bad things about the movie, a good movie review is never like that, you know? Game reviews are almost always like that. And the difference is those are worthwhile. I think if someone says, hey, this is hot, this is hot, this is not, and then those would be, you know, slick graphics, compelling gameplay. These are all, you know, cliches. I want to come back to that in a minute because I have something to say about that. But these are things that your friends can tell you. These are things that you could find on message boards. They're just you go to a game specific thread and it's going to be full of these items, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think on the other hand, if you're a reviewer and you can put together some sort of like coherent, you know, something that represents a coherent thought process with, you know, the equivalent of a thesis almost, you know, where like here I'm going to focus on some aspect of this game and the experience of playing it and put it together in such a way that when you read it, you think differently about the game, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about world-changing stuff here, but you at least you appreciate it in some other way. And well, again, if you disagree, it doesn't matter because, you know, if you could still buy it, if you heard 16,000 other people tell you this game is incredible and you trust them more, then go do it. But then maybe I can tell you, maybe I can get you to think about it in some other way. So you, at least when you talk about it, and you'll understand your own point of view more too by the contrast.
Yeah. I'd actually rather see other forms of entertainment be write their reviews more like game reviews. Yeah, I'd like to see the New York Times have movie reviews with like a pro cons thing at the end. You know, pros, good script, excellent lighting.
Yeah, I don't know. I think along the lines of what Sean's saying, like a really great review should be this kind of starting point for a conversation between the audience and the writer and the people reading and posting on message boards and talking to each other. It shouldn't be this like from up high. I think a lot of people negatively react to scores because they get the sense that it's somebody who's had the opportunity to play the game for anyone else and they get to say, this game sucks. And it, you know, it feels very like authoritarian. Whereas a great review should feel more like someone coming up with insightful things to talk about and inspire other people to talk about the game.
Exactly. Right. It's a point of not here. I'm the final word on this. And it's absurd that some people still think that they're ever in a position to do that.
Mm-hmm. And the sad thing is I think that all this emphasis on scores just makes reviews worse. I mean, it's not like everyone can admit, I think, that game reviews are not fantastic right now. People are trying. But, you know, there are definitely failings and there isn't much room to experiment, though, because the audience is so focused on scores that if you go off on a tangent all and the score doesn't match up with what they're saying, then they're just going to freak out that you haven't gone through all the pros and the cons, all the bullshit that you have to cover your ass with to make sure that you've done, you know, an appropriate review. So you can never do anything interesting without...
It's, you know, I actually had sort of like a post-review discussion with someone at EA. They wanted to get my perspective on Medal of Honor Airborne. And this is not a case of them challenging my review or anything, but they just wanted to supplement their understanding of it. And what was funny is they looked at every line I could tell, and it started to seem clear that they're like, well, you talked about this or that, you know. And I was like, wait a minute, are you reading this in relation to the score where every single negative sentence is like, okay, so if a game is like... hypothetically, this isn't Medal of Honor anymore, but if a game is an 8 and there's only 2 comments that are explicitly negative, then each one of those must cost a point or something.
Right.
Or maybe if they look hard enough, they'll find 8 positive things you said. I was like, whoa, no, no.
Because
let's back out of that for a minute, you know, and then...
Where there's numbers, there's math.
Right? Yeah, I do math that's with your words. Yeah, that's crazy.
That's what people are imagining.
Well, one thing I do with like movie reviews or book reviews that I notice I do less frequently with game reviews is if I've already played, I mean, seen a movie or read a book, I will seek out reviews after that.
Yeah,
right. Which I don't necessarily do with much frequency with games. Like if I
right.
Because we're so immersed in games.
Well, but also because they lack the insight that you're talking about. Like you would go back, and I agree with you, Sean, that's what I do. Like I'll go back and read a book review of a book I really like, say, because I'm hoping that they're going to articulate maybe better than I can think in my own head why I actually liked it.
Right.
Or what
I disliked about it. The very best ones will come out of left field and hit you with possibilities of appreciating the movie in ways that hadn't even crossed your mind.
Right. I want to give a shout out to one movie critic who I really love, who's Mikkel Sal at the San Francisco Chronicle. Now, I have to say, I used to hate this guy because he would quite often like totally dismiss movies that I thought were awesome, like The Matrix. Mm-hmm. But then I realized over time, like then I realized. So at first I was like, any review that Mikkel Sal, any movie he likes, I hate.
Yeah.
You know, that was my first take. But then he would write one and it would be an awesome review of a movie I like. So I'm like, oh shit, I can't predict this guy's taste. Mm-hmm. And then after a while I realized, no, he just writes what he thinks every time and he doesn't give a fuck what the popular, you know, what whichever way you can tell they're supposed to feel about a movie. Mm-hmm. But in every case, he always makes me think about it. Like I can totally disagree with him and it'll piss me off that he's not validating my opinion. But if he hates it, there will always be at least 2 or 3 points where I go, ah, fuck, in the review, like, ah, he's right.
Yeah.
It did do that. Yeah.
There's this thing about, you know, when you watch a great movie or you read a book that you're really into, after you're done with it, it doesn't leave your head.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
And so I'm always going, when that happens to me, to look at reviews and people
right.
talking about it. And it's this way to, like, further your enjoyment of it and continue to think about it.
Right.
And keep your head in that space. And
how often do we ever do that in our own
never.
Industry?
I do it. I try at least all the time. When you play something and you
do.
Know – your first reaction is always an emotional level. This was great or this was mm-hmm. bad. And then, well, why though? I mean, trying to figure out why. And here's to go back to the cliche thing. I think I'll bring it back now. I mean, you can make fun of the language that reviews are written in all you want. Ultimately, I don't think it's that important. So, but I think what's the problem with the cliches and stuff is that they're indicative of a mindset that operates within the confines of cliche. And so that's the difference between someone saying something interesting or saying, you know, what they say, this is compelling or something. You know, you say that so many times. And if you look around that specific word, for example, at now in the past few months, that's the equivalent of good or whatever.
Compelling.
And you'll see it. Yeah, you'll see it over and over again. Do some work out there and you'll see to the point where I don't think you'll ever look at the word the same way.
Yeah.
But the problem then is, you know, when you look at the game and you're like, okay, you're just evaluating it by this boilerplate, you know, checklist, you know, this really simplistic rubric of does it do this, does it do this? And you're not even really aware of your own, you're not even aware of how your criticism's tuned. It's just like, I mean, you should really stop and think, what is it that I like about games or something? And this is the other subject of this is the difference between, you know, subjective reviews and then this chimera, this like illusion of the objective review that you see a lot of people talk about. This came up in the threads as well, you know, and it's like, well, X and X website does the objective reviews and, you know, it's fine. It's just different strokes for different folks and you do the subjective ones. And I would rather say, no, you're blowing smoke up your own ass and as well as your audience's ass when you even say there's such a thing as an objective evaluation of a piece of entertainment. Tell me, like, think for example of an objective and yet evaluative statement that you can make that about a video game in a review that's ultimately going to be helpful. So, if you were to say the graphics look great, that's a subjective statement,
right?
The notion of what looks good is going to differ to everyone. If you're used to playing, you know, say if someone just got done spending a week playing Crysis and they move over and they play, you know, whatever Unreal or something, or the other guy just got done reviewing. you know, some game that doesn't look anywhere near as good as UT. I mean, their frames, your perspective is always going to be influenced by the things that, you know, are going into it.
In it's all about those cliches you were just talking about. I mean, all the things that we've talked about in video games since magazines in the 80s, graphics, gameplay, AI, these sort of bullet points that we hit on all the time. Mm-hmm. They've been around for so long that I think that a lot of people come to think of them as objective, simple things that you can evaluate, that anyone can evaluate. And it happens all the time that people argue over it. Like AI is something that people argue about all the time, because how the fuck do you say, you know, this is good AI or bad AI?
Right. There are a few statements that you can make that are objective that some people would take as evaluation. Like, it works in 60 frames per second. To someone like that, might be an evaluative statement. Is like, yeah, no, it runs really smoothly. Yeah. Right.
Or and the resolution it can run in.
You don't have that with books or movies. You never hear those kind of factors.
Well, it has 478 pages.
I think they don't have it because there aren't the same technical problems. Like,
right, we're not watching movies. Beyond that with that.
Yeah, you don't watch a movie and say, it's all in focus.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
something also about subjectivity, which scares people, is that you assume, oh, it's kind of like, you know, moral relativism or something. That means everything flies. Well, that means you can go and be a Hitler or you can be a Mao and do whatever. It's in the games. It's like, well, that means someone's going to say that, you know, what's a piece of shit game? What's Red Rock? What's Red Rock RTS? This is the greatest game ever. But the thing is, we all, as people, even though we have differences, we all have a lot more in common with one another and our taste than we ever have, you know, apart. Than we ever have, you know, a difference in opinion. And that just keeps things in this framework, you know. So there's a discussion of good AI and bad AI. It's a really narrow window you're talking about here. It's not like someone's going to come out and say, well, the AI in Pac-Man's the most impressive thing I've ever seen, and then say that it's, like, non-existent in whatever, you know, in Halo or something. But the other thing is, if you have pretensions of objectivism in reviews specifically – or not objectivism, sorry, objectivity, very different. And there's a connection, but they're different.
My BioShock review had another one.
You try to dress it up in this neuter, sterile language, and you can convince, you could dupe some people into thinking that, oh, if you sound like Star Trek's Data, then you're being objective.
We have scientifically calculated that this game is an 8.8.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. Like, hey, Data, I heard you lost your virginity last night under a full moon. What was that like? Well, the male unit entered the female unit at this point in time, 17.8 seconds. And it's like, this, again,
it's getting me hot over here.
Yeah, this, for one, again, these are, you know, this might seem like an overly academic discussion, and ultimately they just want to say, hey, but these are games, they're supposed to be fun, and that's what we're talking about, fun, but why things are fun, you know?
Yeah.
And there's no objective answer for why things are fun, so I challenge anyone that really thinks that, you know, and I know who some of the proponents of that are, you know, like over at GameSpot and stuff, think that they honestly believe that they do objective reviews, and That's a debate we could have on some third party forum, Gamma Sutra or something. I'd love to argue it though.
But I think it also comes from that dichotomy of the fact that there are games out there now that are pretty unknowable, vague things that are pretty hard to quantify. Whereas there are still plenty of games that aren't very story centric, that are kind of old school, that you can just point out and say, you know, this is a product, like a Coke or a bag of chips that was made for a specific purpose, and I think because games are so many different things, they're harder to. there's some conflict there between, you know, BioShock and Pac-Man. Mm-hmm. You know? But anyway,
since.
Anyway, so on to something on funny. No, Pac-Man is fucking awesome, and Pac-Man Champion
Ryan,
Edition,
come on, dude,
is excellent.
Well, yeah, making all sorts of noise there.
Sorry,
God. Pull yourself together, there, man.
I'm gonna eat this cookie. Your microphone up.
Ryan's taking Robert's taking a cookie break there while Ryan. Let's let him chew for a moment.
Mm. It's good.
You okay now?
Keeps me from talking.
So were you saying Pac-Man has bad AI?
Oh,
come on!
It's not AI. I mean, but neither is what we call AI. And if you want to go in that direction, what we call AI in video games is not really artificial intelligence.
But let's talk about the mall now.
The mall?
The mall.
I had actually one last thing just back about when we were talking about the console thing. It's just, and this is an old point, but the thing that bothers me when I see all the 360 versus PS3 stuff or whatever is like, if you take one step back out of this industry, nobody else in the whole world even knows what you're talking about. Like, you're all just like loser geeks to everybody else. You know, like, it's so, to me, it feels so much like a divide and conquer. Like, and mine's better than yours. And meanwhile, you know, it's like ants fighting on an anthill, and then like a big foot's just going to come down and kill them all.
Right.
You know? We all like, just get along.
All get along.
Well, if you're going to put like perspective on anything we do, then it looks kind of bad.
Yes, yes.
I mean, I think of all, you know, the people in my life who don't know the difference between, you know, who still think I make games, you know, for the PlayStation. What is that job you do? Do you work on the Wii? Mm-hmm. You know, they don't know anything. So what, you know, listening, you know, they would have no clue what you're talking about, that one game system means more than another. I mean, but I do feel like, I mean, that's a mundane point, but I do feel like it's tied into the idea of these reviews, that we can't ever get past this like rubric of, you know, of data points to look at, rather than being able to experience something as an art form and just take it for what it is, not focus on technical details, platform details, whatever. I mean, like to me, Portal's the most recent game that was just a phenomenon. Like, it was so great that everyone could just stop arguing for 10 minutes and not give a shit about what platform it was on, mm-hmm. not really give a shit. Well, some people give a shit about how long it was. But for the most part, everyone was just like, wow, that was awesome. Like, then it just became, why is Portal awesome? And describing what was awesome about Portal, mm-hmm. rather than just like going through this thing, like proving why PC is great or proving why mouse keyboard is great or whatever. Everyone could just go, wow, we as gamers have this shared experience of this fucking amazing new thing coming in our life. And let's talk about it.
I think that's the deal. Like, okay, game developers just make a whole lot more Portal-like games, and then we'll all shut the fuck up.
There's Robert's solution.
Yes, please.
Make more Portal.
I'll take one next week.
Here's something about the subjectivity thing, like about this is connected to Portal, where saying something, it's like you shouldn't be blabbing. I don't believe you should be blabbing about yourself. But at some points, it makes sense to put the cards on the table, so to speak, and say, here are some key things that inform my perspective. And so when you read this, you know, it's worth keeping this in mind. And now already I find that the Orange Box games are already changing my perspective, in that when I look at, when I play other games, I'm looking at them through a lens that's been modified by having played Portal, you know. So, not to name names, but the length thing, you get to other games, and as soon as you find big sections and you realize that they're actually diminishing the quality of the overall game,
yeah,
I'm just like, wow, why didn't they just cut this out? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, and you really, I'm starting to see, like, sometimes less is more. Not the games need to be that length, but even if it's a difference between, say, a 7-hour and an 8-hour game, sometimes having a bad hour, it's very much, you know, like cinema. Again, there'll be a director's cut. Maybe there's like 5 versions of Apocalypse Now. And if you see the wrong one first, your whole notion of it will be changed differently. Even though the great parts are still great, the bad parts, like, bring it down. Bring the great parts
sometimes
down.
You're like, wow, now I know why they cut out all that shit.
Yep. Yeah.
In fact, last weekend we rented the first Bourne movie, Bourne Identity, I guess. And I put the DVD in, and there were two choices. It was the extended, extra extended edition, didn't say director's cut, extra extended edition, and then theatrical release. Mm-hmm. And a warning screen comes up, or not a warning screen, an info screen, whatever, comes up before the extra value, extra extended version. What, are you pointing at my ugly socks?
No, and you're like curling your toes in our faces and stuff. Robert's bag of chips.
I'm done with my chips. It's okay. You keep your feet up
I'll
there.
I'll put my feet down.
I'm not offended. Sean's just a total obsessive compulsive freak.
That shit's gross.
That's where the
term goes.
You're the guy who posts people like eating feces on the website.
But I don't watch people do it.
Like, that's, you make us look at it.
That extra barrier between.
And,
What do you mean you don't watch people doing it? You have sent me the grossest shit I've ever received on the internet. Like, I would just open up an IM window and there would be a link, and then it's some video of a girl taking a dump in a hot tub.
I know. Every web link from Sean, you have to pause your mouse button and go, do I really want to click
this one? Come on.
All right. So what was I talking about?
You were talking about watching the Bourne Identity.
Okay. This is one last thing that before you start the extra extended thing, there's a disclaimer comes up that says the director had nothing to do with this version. You know, which to me is exactly what you're talking about. It's like, oh man, they just bloated it up.
Yeah.
And the director probably said, fuck that. I edited this movie for a reason. So we didn't watch that one. So.
Yeah. I actually had a similar experience, though, because I finished episode 2, Half-Life and Portal, and then went on to go and finish Heavenly Sword for the PlayStation 3, and that game has the worst, just, you know, section after section of stupid shit for you to do. Just like, here's 8 more guys to slice up. Shoot these guys in the head.
And now, you feel it was just to extend the...
Yeah, it was like reverse porn. So instead of having like stupid, you know, story around the money shots,
okay,
they would have this big elaborate story that they spent a lot of money and time on and that I was sort of interested in, but then they'd put you in the game and it would be this insulting, repetitious, just boring thing that you have to do over and over again until the next section.
That's just because you're a PC guy.
No,
it was all story.
No,
I'm kidding. No money. All porn story.
All
no
porn
money
story,
shot.
Not
yeah,
money
exactly.
Yeah.
And it was really frustrating.
Nightmare.
Yeah.
Fast forward.
Yeah. I tried to finish it, but I just stopped. There's some sections where you have to run around as the Twing Twang girl. I don't know if you guys are playing this at all.
Sean is.
No.
Okay. Well,
touch this one.
There's a section where you're this character who shoots arrows. And at first you start out and you're stationary, so it's just first person and you're shooting around. But then later in the game you start running around.
Wait, she's a turret?
So, yeah. Yeah, but hold on. But later in the game you have to run around like Resident Evil 4 style and change to an aiming view. But with the sometimes the camera's out of your control, so you'll just sort of run into a corner and hope that you're looking at the right person, turn into first person mode, and then shoot. But most of the time, when you turn into first person mode, you're like looking at a wall, and then you have to swivel around, and there's a guy like axing you.
Oh, so you have to go out of third person, swivel around,
and
go back and hope
and
that
then,
you're
then after you shoot, you use the six axis thing, which you can turn off, whatever. But it's very convoluted and very just insulting.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you're confirming my suspicion because I had played the demo.
Yeah.
And like what that last 4 minutes, and I decided from that I just did not want any part of this game. And I am a starved for PS3 content like every other PS3 owner.
That's strictly for Shane Bettenhausen. That game right there. Only a Shane could love that game.
I wish that I could just watch the cutscenes, because the game had nothing to do with the cutscenes like 90% of the time anyway, and I was interested in watching them. They're really well done, and I like the villain in the game a lot. I guess he's played by the Golem guy, whatever. From Lord of the Rings. You know this.
Gollum. Circus?
Andy Serkis.
Andy Serkis.
Jeff's wife.
Andy Serkis.
And
my
was,
wife.
Cool.
That's from,
hey,
that's from
I'll see you in the fucking hallway, man.
I know what
last
you're talking
week's
about.
Gag.
Yeah, I called my wife Gollum. I'm sorry, honey.
Ouch.
Such an idiot.
She's just your precious.
That's right. Thanks for the save. Yeah.
My precious. That's what I meant. It was just a mixed metaphor. I'm sorry, honey. Yeah, but I wanted to watch the rest of the movies, but you have to play the game to watch the rest of the movies, so fuck it.
You can't get the movie DVD.
There's probably a lot of good movies you haven't seen. I would recommend one of those.
Yeah.
Tell me about that six axis part though, because that's interesting.
You aim a little bit with in the first person mode, and then when you hold down the button, you go into like a slow mo drive the arrow thing, which is actually when it's early in the game, I found it kind of fun, and I like motion control. I like Wii stuff. I'm not.
There's a difference.
Opposed.
Though.
I know there's a difference, and I'm not even opposed to the kinds of games that break from like traditional joystick to some motion control here and there. Even though I know a lot of people find that annoying and crazy. But later on in the game, it just gets to be ridiculous when you're doing these really elaborate scenes where you got to shoot someone right in the head, you know, and they're 10 feet away from you. And it's just a pain.
But, and you're guiding it with the
motion control. Well, you can change it. At least they give you the option.
Feel that control is the worst thing to happen to PS3. I mean, of all the bad things to happen to PS3, that's probably the worst.
It seems pretty unresponsive compared to the Wii.
And just for the fact that it's there and that, like, instances like Lair where, you know, people just feel obligated to do something
Do you have a PS3?
I do, and I've played it for about 3 or 4 hours since I bought it.
Mm-hmm. I'm hoping the lesson
You got to get Everyday Shooter. That's hot.
I have to...
That is a good game. Do you have that?
I do not have that.
Get that game. It's fantastic.
Sean, you were saying what? The lesson learned is what?
Well, I hope Lair has, you know, the experience with Lair has taught developers that just because it's there doesn't mean you have to make it obligatory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I hope it's a quickly learned lesson is all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One last thing about Heavenly Sword. The ultimate sin, it will make you watch a movie section over and over again if you die. So even though you've seen it once,
and you can't skip it. Oh God!
To me, it's annoying enough that you can't skip it if you want to anyway. But you can't even skip it after you watch it.
How in 2007 does that function not make it into a game?
Yeah, you need to have that.
That's hubris or like
it's total hubris,
arrogance or stupidity.
Yeah. I would now knowing what we do, speaking with developers here and there, it's got to be just vanity.
Uh-huh. You got to watch it. But, again and again?
I think they just knew that was the point of the game. It's like, why skip the point of the game?
We paid this CG studio, you know, $400,000 for these.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're going to watch them.
There really is. I mean, the first time, maybe. I could see if maybe. I mean, I don't agree. I mean, I think that you should be able to skip it no matter what, even the first time. But there's no excuse after the first time.
Yeah.
Yes, we watched your great movie. Fine. We know now that Princess Dumbassia, you know, has fallen out of the tower, and you gotta go get her the crystal, whatever the fuck.
Ryan, I think it's a good time to you got some beef with Spider-Man these days.
You do?
Like the what? Person? Or
yeah,
the...
Peter Parker himself. Are you calling him out?
Yeah.
Throw down.
Oh God, do we really want to get into this?
Yes,
want me, dude.
Tell us.
Otherwise, I'd just be telling you about the new Left 4 Dead level I played and all this other stuff.
Oh, no one cares about that.
Game.
No care about Ryan's fight with Spider-Man.
We don't need to hear about evil Spider-Man.
Beef. What's up with Spider-Man, dude? What the fuck did they do to him this week?
All right. Well, I was just telling Sean about this dumbass storyline I've been hearing about in the current Spider-Man comic.
Which comic?
I don't know. There's like Amazing Spider-Man and
Stupendous.
Awesome Spider-Man.
This matters.
Ultimate completely Spider-Man. Retarded Spider-Man. I don't
Slightly
know.
Dickish Spider-Man. Yeah.
But so there's some huge storyline going on right now that I guess the ending was apparently leaked, where Spider-Man's Aunt May gets shot and she gets rushed to the hospital and he doesn't want her to die, so he makes a deal with the devil.
The devil? Like Satan?
I don't know.
Mephisto.
Yeah, some...
Beelzebub?
He's a real character in a Marvel Universe.
Mephisto.
Yeah.
Oh, he makes a deal. Okay.
And so the devil agrees to bring his old Aunt May back to life, making sure she doesn't die, whatever. But they alter reality so that Spider-Man never met Mary Jane and got married.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, so this is how they're retconning?
Yeah. So, okay, like I said, this is a huge spoiler for two issues that have not come out now, so
wait,
sorry,
did you say
Marvel
that?
Fans.
I think you said that
after the fact. No,
I said before I launched to it that it got leaked, so.
Yeah, okay. You would assume.
That shit is so sad.
But,
I don't understand. What's the point of doing that? Like, why would they do that?
Well, I mean, they're basically, like, dialing Spider-Man back to, like, where he was, you know, whenever.
I think a lot of people complain that when he married Mary Jane, it all went, that was when it jumped the shark or whatever. So, like, well, let's undo that so it no longer jumped the shark.
There's enough, like.
It's like, I don't know.
Shark's been
doesn't
jumped.
Work like that.
If it's like, jump back over the other way.
Going in circles. It's stupid.
Yeah. I actually want to read about, like, Spider-Man and married life. That sounds a lot cooler than, like, the sort of puppy love storylines. I want to see Spider-Man
cool.
come home from work and his wife is like, can't you ever do a single fucking dish?
Right, right. He comes home, he's taking off his mask, and she's sitting there like all resentful of him. Like, sorry, I was just trying to take down Green Goblin. You know, got important things to do.
Great power, great responsibility.
Oh, that's great. Well, meanwhile.
You know, the lawn could have used some of your amazing superpowers.
there was some
statue on the fritz again.
I was showing Sean this some awful statue that they made of like Mary Jane like bending over doing Spider-Man's laundry or something.
Yeah. Oh,
it was terrible.
A statue?
The problem though is that after you told that story, no one stopped to say, okay, the devil says, Spider-Man, you can have your grandma, but I don't want you in this relationship. Spider-Man is like, when is the fucking Mephisto Dr. Phil?
That's not the
okay. But no, if you get enough neck-bearded, you know, men, grotesque men, babies, and birth defects to basically say, scream, like, he can't be married. And I don't understand this. There was once a time where you could say, you could paint with, with broad strokes and say, well, people who read Spider-Man don't want Spider-Man married because they ain't married and they can't relate. But ever since the advent of Yahoo Personals, I believe that 90% of Spider-Man readers are now married. Not happily. Maybe that's the reason. Maybe that's why the devil came in.
But here's what I don't understand. I quit reading comic books many, many years ago now. But for a long, long stretch, including in my adulthood, I was reading them. I was buying superhero comics every Wednesday. And you know, hearing the story from Ryan after being out of the universe long enough that I don't know what the fuck's going on with any of these people anymore. Like, why? Like, they're always retconning. Everything's been turned around 800 times now. So right. Why is another new one even a controversy? Isn't at this point, like, it just assumed that they're going to fuck with it all the time?
If they do something unpopular, they're going to undo it. That's how it
works. Oh, this guy who's dead is old. Like, isn't Hal Jordan alive again now?
Yes, he is.
Yep. See, he was dead last time I read it. Now he's alive.
The story.
Why can't they just come up with new comic book characters?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I don't understand that. Why does it got to be Spider-Man all the fucking time? Why can't it be somebody else?
Rashawn?
I lost mine.
Come on.
I'm sorry.
Bring it back.
It's all good. Go on.
Oh, no.
Dude.
Oh, there's a sad moment on the podcast.
Sean's giving me a guilt trip right now.
No, I've been trying to get something in for the past 20 minutes. It's all good.
Man, you never get to talk on this podcast.
But I got a good one. Do you still remember it, or are you just sulking?
I forget it now. No.
All right.
Moment's passed.
All right. The moment's passed.
It was a tie-in.
I apologize.
It was a tie-in with soap operas.
Soap opera.
So you're just gonna fucking hint at it now?
Right, now we can just make it. We can deduct what you were gonna say.
Yeah,
that they it just totally that. Yeah, you could watch any. You could leave a soap opera for 6 years and come back. It's either the same plot line or the plot lines are
No.
See, I'm baiting you into saying what you were gonna say. So your point was what then?
Just that. No, it's like if you have to tell, I don't envy the people that write those stories, because if you have to tell the same story basically for 30, 40 years, Spider-Man's been around at least like 35 years, you get into that the same problem as a soap opera. Season one, like dude gets a girlfriend. Season two, like bitch gets married. Season three, asshole gets divorced. Season four, someone's reincarnated. The devil comes in and the zombies attack. You know, it's like in the soap operas, like right. If you go in at any one moment, you have these assumptions and you think it's going to be a bunch of people like crying or kissing once in a while and like some old stepmom coming in and yelling at someone and then her making out with stepdad. But then now and then you flip through the channels and there's like a ghost or some kind of shit on there.
Yeah.
And that's the same. That's the same right, thing. That's why that's when the devil comes in to tell Spider-Man who he's supposed to be tapping and who he's not.
This is why I think the British TV is better than American TV, because they're much more inclined to like take an idea, a storyline, and end it after. They'll just do like, we're going to make the show be 6 episodes. That way the thing just stays pure. They tell a story, they get in, they get out. Whereas with American TV, because they want to keep it on year after year, the just as it relates to a running comic book or a running soap opera, even if just like a 6 or 7 season TV series, you're going to run out of ideas.
Oh,
you're
right.
Going to run out of what made this thing great in the first place, and then you're going to start adding the ghosts or the reincarnation, or actually he wasn't really dead.
Oh, yeah, it's got to be impossible for like a TV writer to like know the beginning of their story and like the end of their story and not how long they're going to be forced to drag that out.
Because in most cases, there's like 40 writers, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're seeing it on Heroes season. Already in the second season. But, mid-shark jump.
I mean, in America, we don't stop anything that has any money-making potential. We don't close down the ATM. It's like, do you really think there's not going to be another Star Wars movie? Give me a fucking break. You know? If there's money to be made, there will be one.
Oh, it was part of the PR plan to say there isn't going to be one.
Yeah, then, sure.
Like, yeah.
Spring it on them. Oh, look, I changed my mind again. Aren't I awesome?
They'll make that stuff until people stop showing up.
Well, it's like with comics and stuff. It's like monthly, you know, serialized storytelling. But it
they are so
nothing ever moves forward.
We treat
and it
our
can't.
How about these characters die and you make new characters? And that's
but
you
they
know.
Can't do that, right? I mean, they can't make them die
because it's what Robert's saying.
It's they got comics,
the
money. And
people we get used to the new characters.
We treat our entertainment media the same way we treat our environment.
Wow,
that was heavy.
That is.
You keep going.
There's another dollar there. You keep going. Doesn't matter how bad it gets. You go to the last penny.
So we're going to...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're going to take a break. We're going to be back in a moment.
The Star Wars Battlefront Entertainment Pack includes all new, limited edition, lighter, slimmer, white PSP with Darth Vader art and Star Wars Battlefront Renegade Squadron game. Play on widescreen LCD or on any TV with video out.
This is the second time I've heard this claim in about a week or so, and I'm at a loss as to where it comes from. I could likely find plenty of pictures of him dirty and or sweating, but has anyone got any reference for this whole Superman doesn't need to go to the bathroom or sweat thing?
I seem to recall that Mark Schultz once said in Wizard that one of the things he most wanted to do was make Superman able to sweat or to urinate. Apparently, he wrote a scene that had Superman sweating. An editorial wrote back that Superman doesn't sweat. I'm sure I've seen him sweat, but then again, even if he has sweat glands, nothing on Earth should make him exert himself to do it. And he can plunge right into the sun, so no temperature on Earth should make him that hot. It's actually interesting to think about.
Oh, yeah.
One of Byrne's changes in the Superman revamp was how Superman now uses 100% of whatever he ingests for energy, and therefore doesn't create waste, including sweat, feces, etc. Why he felt this topic needed explicit addressing is beyond me.
I remember reading somewhere a long time ago that Superman doesn't have to eat, so you're right. It makes sense. He gets everything he needs from our yellow sun. I guess this would be why he doesn't need to urinate or doo-doo. Under the yellow sun, his digestive system completely breaks down the food which he chooses to eat and leaves no waste. Under a red sun, I'm sure he could and would do all the same stuff that we have to do.
I don't know. That whole no sweating thing could play hell on a secret identity. Suppose Metropolis is hit with a heat wave. Not the villain heat wave, but a real heat wave. How would Clark be able to explain away not sweating?
He could just explain it as his body being really good at regulating temperatures. I mean, I know people who don't sweat at all in conditions that make me sweat gallons.
Superman doesn't sweat because if he doesn't feel heat or cold when he has his powers, it's...
Don't do that, going back. I just conflated fucking Earl Vest, the man hungry, mad hungry for the written word.
When he has his powers, it's simply because the factors that cause people to biologically sweat don't affect him nearly as much. When he loses his powers, all bets are off. The idea that he doesn't have to use the bathroom, however, is absurd. We all use the bathroom, even me.
Yeah, so that's some hero from a comic book form.
Dude, you're like a white Eddie Murphy. You could play like multiple characters
until
in
I mix them up. Until I mix them up, and two become one.
Let's get Sean in a fat suit.
Wow.
So, unfortunately, I'll save it for next week. There's a very, very killer
Hero of the Web. I didn't know how this one would go over. It was last minute, but I couldn't find it like right before we ran in here, and we'll bring it back to you.
Teaser.
So what do you guys think? Does he sweat?
Does he shit?
I think he, doesn't exist.
Don't say that. I don't know.
Why a comic book? Like, you'd never catch, like, a video game player doing this shit with, like, Master Chief.
Haven't we read Heroes of the Web just
but
like
comic
that?
Book characters.
We just did. We just read one about Master Chief.
Jeffrey.
Again.
I wasn't in on the joke.
Yeah. It happens every once a week, I think.
Where I'm not in on the joke?
Yeah.
I'm stupid.
What was the one where? Oh yeah, Team Fortress 2. If you look closely on the documents case on the papers that fall out, you'll see the names of maps, and then you ruined it.
Yeah,
but despite the fact people still wrote in asking me what resolution they needed to see it, and what if I could just tell them the names of the maps. Uh-huh.
Wow.
And it was like that was in the context of the old Nerd's Tale discussion.
People don't do this with other. You know, people don't. No one ever asks. You know, does Mary Tyler Moore take a shit?
Right.
Mary Tyler Moore.
I'm sure if you looked hard enough.
Have you ever
if I go to a Mary Tyler Moore forum?
It's because the internet didn't exist back then.
Well, okay.
Or why Fred Flintstone has a separate bed.
Have you ever looked at the
Hey, I saw an Urban Dictionary. I'm sorry, but he just reminded me about Flintstones. Urban Dictionary, Flintstoning is now a verb.
Uh-oh.
To Flintstone is move your desk when you're sitting at a desk, like at school, a desk with a chair. When you move it without getting up, so like you just lift it up and move and walk with your feet.
Nice.
That guy just Flintstoned over to Joe to pick up my pencil.
I'm sorry. No, what I was saying is, as far as people being like this about movies, have you guys ever looked at the IMDb message boards?
Yeah,
and gone
sad.
To specific actors' pages, because there are some fucking crazy people there. Like, it's just as insane.
The internet in general.
Yeah, I
send
think
me links,
so.
Man. We need to do them next.
Yeah, Heroes of the Web.
I got one more Urban Dictionary thing that I just remembered from that same day, because it relates to this podcast. It's when a bunch of guys get together to hang out and talk. You can now call that a brodeo.
So this right here is a brodeo.
We're having a brodeo.
A brodeo.
So we could change our name actually to GFW Brodeo.
There's another one.
That's a great
sure
idea.
Could.
Or not.
That's actually
Brodeo. What do
it's
you think?
Catchy.
Brodeo.
That'll work.
Yeah.
And we need some. We constantly talk about the possibility of renaming our podcast so that we can get people who don't just listen, who aren't just PC gamers.
Yeah, but GFW's still in there. If you got GFW Brodeo, you still got the GFW part.
How about just Brodeo?
Just Brodeo?
Yeah, that's it.
It kind of has that ring of an FM radio rock station that has another name, you know, 97.5, the Brodeo.
And then it cuts in with like a sample from Metallica's Enter Sandman or something.
I think that's a good idea.
Okay.
Here's another Urban Dictionary thing is krill. That's what I introduced myself to.
Yeah.
That's just crack cocaine. But why are you laughing? That's not funny. But no, the reason I brought it up was on my mind today. The reason I had krill in the brain is because one of the Game Videos guys comes over and he was asking if I'd been playing the review copy of Gears of War for PC.
Yeah.
And he was talking about RAM. I mean, he's way into it. Jason Bertrand's like, he's a fiend for that Gears of War.
On the PC specifically?
Just in general.
Okay.
I mean, he's playing it again. He was like talking about – he was asking me why RAM – doesn't just dude, what the fuck am I babbling about? Why Ram, the end boss, doesn't just keep wearing his krill coat? Because you know the krills are those flying things
when
you fight the boss. Spoiler alert, I guess. You shoot the krill. The krill protect him, and he's like, "Well, dude, the krill protect him. Why did they ever leave him? He could just stay alive forever if he kept him.
Because then you couldn't finish the game, dummy."
And then so I told him, "Yeah, that he was like that krill was just like a euphemism for crack cocaine, and that he gets ripped up, and that that's how he gets all the underlings in that game to like do his bidding and stuff. They're all like Jones and for like he doles out krill."
Nice.
Well, I started playing this.
That's explaining the extra
Gears of War for the PC, just to turn it into it.
Yeah.
So gaming discussion.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But I'm not that far into it, and so far, I don't know.
Really?
Yeah.
They
I don't
really excited about it.
I don't know. I have to say up front, I have not made it out of the very first area of the game.
Oh well.
So we're talking super early. I just have to say that my gut reaction, and this is a game that I am playing, I want to play,
Perhaps it will get better. So this is just a gut reaction. And the gut reaction was, and I played Gears of War on Xbox 360 all the way through, and I liked it a lot. But I had a huge disconnect in my gamer brain when I turned this game on and started and was playing a shooter with the keyboard and mouse, and I couldn't run unless I pressed a button. And then the button didn't let me run freely. The button takes me into cover, right? That's the conceit of Gears of War, right?
Yeah.
You don't run. You're like creeping from area to area, but then you can run for cover.
I'm just trying to figure out why it would be different, because if you're used to playing Halo, it's still just as odd to
right.
you.
I don't know either. I'm bringing this up because I couldn't figure out why.
You're talking about the roadie run thing, and then it'll, like, if you're doing it around cover, then it'll put you into cover.
Yes.
And it feels weird on
it
the
feels
keyboard.
Weird on the PC to me. I accepted that game conceit on the 360.
Hmm.
On the PC now, I'm feeling like I don't have any freedom here. Like, what if I just want to run to cover, and I want to run right here in this place, and I want control of the run? I don't want the button I don't want the button doing the run for me.
I see what you're saying. Like, the consolidated action on a controller, whereas on a keyboard, you could have had, like, two different options.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the running in there, I don't know. You get used to it. It is like you're saying, it's like NASCAR, where if you play multiplayer, you have this mindset where you want to rush and get the weapons first, pick up the grenades or whatever it is. So the trick is to run and to avoid the obstacles, which will make you stick to them, like cover. Mm-hmm. So you kind of anticipate the corner, like, again, in a NASCAR. You prep for the perfect curve and go around it. It's just different, but yeah. I mean, I'm more worried about, at this point, if the game is – was it kind of like – It had its time last year, and now with all these other experiences, that the one note nature, you know, because Gears, I believe, hits that one note so very well.
Yeah,
but just hits that one note over and over again. If that's really going to,
yeah, I mean, playing it after, I hate to say it because we keep using this comparison, but playing it after the Orange Box stuff,
mm-hmm. BioShock, and all these
and
other,
BioShock, yeah, I just felt like, oh my god, you know, just. Yeah, I did this. I mean, maybe it's hard to say because I did play it all the way through already on another platform. So maybe if you're a PC gamer who's never experienced this, this is going to feel really cool to you. I can't judge that yet.
Right.
So it's possible.
I'll try the multiplayer.
The other thing I didn't like, which is just whatever, I was talking about this before we podcasted, is if you go to the you know, they have achievements just like they do on the PC, but you need to be connected to Windows Live, the PC version of Xbox Live, to get the achievements and to do other things to connect in multiplayer. But the interface screen for even doing things like connecting to Windows Live or for checking your achievements, they've got the Xbox Live language up there on the screen. You know, if you want to press B, you know, the red B, press A, they're using the actual controller buttons on the screens themselves, which... That's fine. We've seen that before in games, and we know that you can use this game with a controller. And in fact, of course, if you can use a controller, why aren't you just playing it on
the
Xbox?
It's like all psychology
but,
for you, though.
But
like,
it is psychology.
Find it offensive
that... I do find it offensive because they've gone out of their way to make a big deal about, you know, the cross-platform capabilities, the fact that this is now a PC game.
Yeah.
So don't put your fucking controller language on the game then.
Auto-detect when you put the USB.
Yes, if my controller's connected, which it wasn't. Then you can have that on there. But I did not have that in there, so don't tell me to press B.
What you don't get is that the PC is the Xbox 720.
Shh.
Oh.
Oh.
Not that they spun
around twice.
That, yeah, it's the Gears of War a year later with some extra degrees of ratitude in it.
Right. But I just wanted them to remove that stuff. I wanted them to say, hi, PC gamer. We're bringing this game that was out on another platform to you now. We want you to have this great PC shooter experience. So here you go. We have custom tailored this to be for you. So therefore, we are going to assume you're using a keyboard and mouse, like 99% of PC gamers, and not talk to you about those other things, unless we detect it on your machine.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
It was particularly offensive with Shadow. I mean, that's one reason why Shadowrun bombed so bad on PC, is it's like... It was so clearly made for not just the interface and everything, but it was so clearly made for people on 360.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, okay, you're going to launch this initiative in Halo 2 with these console games.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, you know, even the bigger nuisance there was to say, well, this is your chance to pit console players against, you know, PC ones and see how it falls into place, but then it's like really. Totally slanted toward the console people. And it's like, okay, way to piss off.
Oh, by the way, if you haven't seen it yet, I've now posted that famous photo of PC Shadowrun players that was in the new issue of our magazine. You can now find it up on my blog, and the folks over at NeoGAF have it on the GFW thread there. So if you want to see a great photo of happy PC gamers playing Shadowrun, go check it out. now you know what we were making fun of.
It was funny because right before the podcast, I found like an old Penny Arcade where they were making fun of an ad where someone was playing the box art to Warcraft 3.
Yeah,
right.
It was awesome. It was awesome comic. Any of you guys play UT3 demo since last time we met?
Not me.
I'm bad.
No one.
End
of topic.
What do you got to say about it, Sean? Are you liking it more, hating it more?
What's your beef, man? I'm not liking it. It's about the same. It was one of those cases where when I first turned it on, I realized I wasn't that into it, but I didn't know why. And the more time I spend with it, the closer I think I'm getting. But before that, there's just some like general like corny, cheesy things about it, which isn't necessarily so bad. But for some reason, every time I put the game down, like, that's Greered. Which is like gross and weird.
Gross and weird. Yeah. This is Sean's new verbal of the day.
That's Greered, man. No, but part of it is so ridiculous. You get in and these characters and people are hitting the taunts and you hear, F yeah! And that's not me censoring myself. That's what it
says.
They
say F yeah?
F yeah! F yeah! And then you hear, whoa, I'm on fire! And then, you'll feel that one in a moment. It's like, what the fuck is that?
Haven't they been doing that in that series like for forever, though?
It's very much like Mortal Kombat. Mm-hmm. Yeah. For some reason, this voice actor right now,
headshot.
You hear him over and over again, But then, like, there's just this ridiculous joke. You just go around and you just mash that key the whole time, and your face pops up in the corner, and then you hear the taunt. So, like, I'll get in there and just do that. I'll bind it to a key that I can hit with my pinky all the time, like shift. And so you just unleash this constant taunt of, yeah, I'm on fire! And in addition to that, people really get mad.
Yeah.
They're like, shut up. And then they eventually, because there's no, like, for some reason, I have never been in a UT3 demo server with an admin. No one can kick me. And they eventually, like, and it says it to both teams, and they're like, I'm out of here. That's it. I'm out of here. And people get so mad, but I tell them, like, it's creating an emotional high point when I play. And they're like, dude, you're not even doing it when you're getting a kill. You just keep fucking pressing the button.
My response
is, F yeah!
There are people listening right now who are like, God, Sean's an asshole. You're like going around like fucking with people till they leave your game.
Why did they put that in the game?
Do you at least get to select your taunt, or is it the random taunt? Like
it's
one
random.
Of those poison like target or something when you press the hand.
And there's another default in there where it's like text to voice, and if you have that on, anytime someone type something, you hear the Stephen Hawking voice come in and repeat it. So the first time you play,
not literally
it's
Stephen
just
Hawking.
This like incessant torrent of babbling computers. What the hell is going on? But it's like,
sorry,
people talking about video
go
cards and
hell.
Stuff. creates an emotional high point. F yeah, emotional high point. And just like, so you spam that and you double up with the text.
That actually sounds really fun.
That does sound fun.
I remember, it is shooter.
For 3 minutes.
I remember when I was playing Team Fortress 2 with you, I guess it was a couple weeks ago now, and you and I were both, we kept just run the whole level. You and I weren't even talking about how we were going to do it. We were just both doing it. We kept hitting the medic key nonstop. Medic!
That's not even as bad,
though. But I got yelled at because I was doing it, and this was after you left, and I was a medic. So I kept doing that, and then some guy goes, "You asshole, you are a medic." Why are you? And I said, "Yeah, I'm saying I am one. I'm saying I'm available. That's why I'm doing
just
it.
Just announcing
medic
services.
Here. Medic."
Trying to communicate. So there's something, a few things as I'm getting closer to figuring out what it is. I've been mainly playing Vehicle CTF, and it seems kind of bloated to me. Like someone comes up with an idea and they say, hey, this will be cool. And it does seem like a cool idea. And then they put it in and maybe it doesn't work the way that it was, you know, proposed to work. And they leave it in. But then they say, well, we're going to have to find some other solution. And then they keep doing that. So an example would be you take the impact hammer and you say, let's give it an alt fire. which would be hitting mouse two. For let's break it down for Robert before he says, "What the hell am I talking
huh?
about?"
What is mouse, so, mouse two?
The impact hammer is your melee.
Is that
weapon.
P?
Is that P? The impact hammer is your melee weapon, and if you, you know, as in all Unreal tournament games, they have a primary, secondary, and sometimes tertiary. Fire modes, and the second one.
You talking syllables?
Is an
like lots of them.
Yeah. Okay. So let me say this thing.
Okay.
So the EMP alt fire on it is supposed to eject someone from a vehicle, but the problem is the majority of the vehicles fly so fast and hit you so quickly and kill you so instantly that like there's no point to it. There's no way you're going to hit anyone and knock them out. So you maybe it works for a tank or something if you're lucky enough to get up beside it and you can eject them from that. So it seems cool. But then you're like, okay, well, what do you do against – they have this Manta is a, you know, sort of a little flying skiff vehicle. And it's super lethal because it just runs everyone over. And like, what do I do about this thing? It's just going to run me over instantly. So there's a feign death key. And you're like, hey, that's pretty interesting. But of course, you're adding another layer of complexity to it. So you feign death, but then you realize he doesn't see that your name. It doesn't say he killed you or anything or fake him out in that way. So he just turns around and either shoots you or runs you over again. And the second time by hitting his alt fire, he lowers his vehicle to the ground and then he scrapes you off the sidewalk. So what happens then is that the feign death key is basically bend over and spread your cheeks for the Manta key now. It's like, here comes the Manta.
Well,
what
they
do
couldn't
I do?
Call it that.
Here's I have a couple options here. Do I let it run me over, or do I lay down and let it run me over? You know. Then, to counter, you know, the lethality of vehicles, they add rockets. The Avril rocket, and it locks on by holding one button down. And once you're locked onto someone, it doesn't even – it's instant. You just press the button, and if something's on the screen, it will lock to whatever vehicle's on the screen. And then you press fire. As long as you kick the other one down, it will track it and blow it up. There's very, very few circumstances where you can evade it. There's no countermeasures or anything. And you ask people, what the hell are you supposed to do about that? And they say, you got to get out of the vehicle. Like, that's great. What if you're flying? There's no parachutes in this game, you know. You got to get out of the vehicle. So, and then you add to that that this vehicle CTF, and it's this very small map. You're going back and forth, and hey, the quick moving vehicles like Mantas and stuff. I understand they just seem like great, you know, in and out cap vehicles because while you can't ride the vehicle while you have the flag, people can attach to it with the sort of tether line and follow you along. All that seems great, but then there's like, why is there artillery? Your mobile artillery and the aircraft and all these other things, it just kind of seems like superfluous, you know? It's like they don't
Wouldn't they seem... be support vehicles for...
But for capping this flag across the map that's basically there's one side and there's a blue flag and there's another, there's and you just go across this bridge or beneath the bridge, it just... I don't know. It just doesn't work so well for me. And then the other significant issue that I can put my finger on is that you never know what killed you. I mean, in general, in games, you guys play shooters, is that... You know how annoying that is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When it's just all of a sudden you're there doing something and then it's
and
like
you're dead.
You're
looking
dead.
Sideways at the ground.
Yeah. And
they don't zoom in on the guy who killed you or anything?
No, there's no death cam. It'll say who did it, but you don't know what they killed you with. And that's
really?
Part of the
problem. It doesn't even have an icon of like what gun they used?
No, it doesn't. Not that I'm able to see, no. And it's just like...
Wow, because that goes back to like Doom and Quake
right.
did that.
And so... What happens, you kind of just feel like you don't build up this sense of rivalry. Even for some reason, even though it says his name, I never build up this kind of rivalry and the gratification you get from playing multiplayer games. It almost feels like I'm playing bots, even though it's human, which is weird. And that thing is all important, I'm realizing, for me. You know, when I play Battlefield, if I'm a single infantry guy and I take out a whole squad, I feel like... Like, there's just that little oomph. Like when you're playing sports or something. Like, yeah. Or even if you're playing, you know, ping pong or foosball, you know, when you win, it feels good. And I just don't get that ever. Even when I go on, like, a crazy spree and kill, like, 14 dudes in a row.
Maybe it's, like, simulating what it's like to be a psychotic mass murderer.
Yeah,
so you just
exactly.
kill 18 people, and I feel nothing. All I feel is the emptiness of my soul.
They need a key for that.
Wow.
I feel empty!
They had a team.
So, that's, I'm still trying to figure out exactly what it is that's causing that, but... yeah, it's just not there. And I've heard other people say the same. They're like, yeah, I don't really feel like, don't feel that, like, you know, suck it down when you, when you're killing and when you die. It's just kind of this arbitrary. There's no spawn time. You're just there you are again and kind of roaming around. And it's not a horrible game, but it's just not, it's not doing it for me for some reason.
There's a box quote.
It's not doing it for me for some reason.
This is the beta, of course.
Right.
I'm not even playing the onslaught mode. Or, you know, the any of the big new stuff that they put in the game. But
remains to be seen, but they have some serious competition this year.
Yeah. And
yeah,
there are very few servers up for it, surprisingly, compared to, like, say, when Team Fortress 2 beta came out, how many occupied, populated servers there are. There are very, very few with this UT3 demo, which seems kind of... Yeah.
What I'd like to know, and I know we're running out of time this week, is, how popular, populated the enemy territory servers are right now.
I've been playing a little bit, and I do like that game. Mm-hmm. Realizing I don't like it as much as Battlefield 2. It's a different game. Mm-hmm. But I do like it a lot. It's a lot of Australians and Brits and Germans and stuff, so it seems like a lot of non-North American, like, it's doing well in other markets.
Yeah, we'll have to check that out. We Never gave it a very good review in our magazine, so
I think that's a great game, and I do definitely like putting that. I really prefer it to the demo, although that's not the most fair comparison.
I think it's just like suffering from TF2 timing.
Yeah,
the enemy territory.
Yeah,
yeah.
So many games out right now, you know.
And
also
the
opposite of last
even
year.
Of other genres, it's like I continue. Like now, it's weird. Like I still play Opposing Fronts a lot. We had an awesome 4v4 game against some people that listened to the podcast the other night.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, cool.
Want to give them a shout-out here?
I forget their names.
Listener A, B, C,
Well, they kind of just joined. I added a bunch of people to the friends list, and, you know, maybe next time we'll set things up more. Talking. I felt bad because some of the people on my team were talking shit. Because there's just a tradition. Like, if you get in someone's back base, the moment you know you're going to win... You just get that giddy, like, now it's time to talk shit. But a moment ago, you didn't dare say a thing because there was a chance that, like, it would have backfired. they would have been like, oh, yeah, what do you say now, bitch? Yeah. But so a couple people, as soon as they get in that back base and they start the end game scenario stuff, I'm so deep in you. How does it feel? How would you describe your feeling at this moment? Are you having the game, of course, is called Big Fun. Yeah, how big is the fun that you're having? Did you describe this as Big Fun? But so, hey, we're getting the time warning, but yeah, can I say something about Left 4 Dead?
Very quickly. Please.
You guys interested in Left 4 Dead?
Definitely interested totally in Left 4 Dead.
Tell us about Left 4 Dead!
No. Tell the folks. Yes, you are. So tell the folks what Left 4 Dead is, just in case they don't know.
Ryan, I think actually you would like it.
You would, Ryan. Shut up.
I think you'd enjoy
tell
it.
Tell me about
it's like
Left
4 Pokemon,
Dead.
But more Japanese.
Exactly.
Ryan's like, tell me more.
I don't like the direction this is going.
It's like Spider-Man, except he's still married to Mary Jane.
Oh, I'm sold.
So it's a four-player cooperative game that also has some elements of a competitive game in it.
Made by?
By Valve and Turtle Rock. Turtle Rock is, you know, it's co-developed by the two. Turtle Rock is the group who did the bots for Counter-Strike, a number of CS maps, stuff like that. They've had a long working relationship with Valve. And Chet Falzek is writing it, and he is, you know, one of the – him and Eric Wolpaw wrote Portal and, you know, dialogue for Team Fortress 2 and stuff. So it's a name that people are learning. I was looking around. Everyone's staring at me.
I know.
Okay, so we're just interested. You have our attention.
So four players, you're humans. It's a zombie apocalypse. Except, of course, they're called infected. They've got some disease that makes them want to eat you, but they can be killed. So anyway, in the most simplistic sense, it's like having, you know, two to four people play this cooperative game where zombies are attacking you in creepy environments, but they are very fast. You know, it's the fast-moving sort. They're super agile. There's almost really nowhere to hide in that if you climb something, they'll climb up after you. They'll leap obstacles. They come in. They're dynamically, you know, every time you play a campaign, which there are four,
they enter the environment in a different location, but it's always a good, it's like you don't look somewhere and see a bunch of them just appeared. Like they come in through, like if there's pipes on the ceiling, if there's a forest, which is, you know, one of the new levels I played, they just come out for, come out of the trees and stuff and out of the dark parts of the forest. So as you're playing from that point of view, you're thinking, you know, originally when I heard about it, I was like, okay, that sounds really simple. And there's this other element of the game that sounded more promising. And I'll tell you about that in a moment. But when I, as soon as I played it, and here's one of those cases where, you know, when we talk about when we write previews and it's like, oh, well, you can't really be, you know, too evaluative of stuff. It's like one of those times where every time I played it, you're like, that's a great game. This is going to be a great game. I have no doubts about it because, like, it was so much fun playing it. If, like, I had just, I would have went and bought it based on, you know, the time I spent playing it. And you can also see that, like, yeah, I can give this to other – if I show other people, they're going to like looking at it and they're going to want to play it too. So I know it'll be fun. Like Robert, I know we'll be able to get some of us to all play it. So it's kind of just the usual tense thing. You know, zombies are running everywhere, coming and attacking you, and you're sort of creating sectors of fire if you're smart. So, you know, and always watching your back because, you know, because it can come from everywhere again. If one of you goes down, there's the cooperative element where you can help them up. You could share your health packs. You have a finite amount of them and stuff like that. And then they mix it up by putting these, you know, sort of super types of zombies in that they call boss infected. And one of them, for example, is this bloated, you know, fat, monstrous piece of shit. And he pukes on you. And if he pukes on you, you suddenly – it's like this pheromone that drives the rest of the regular zombies like apeshit. And they all just come running out of the woodwork at you, you know, 15, 20 at a time. And that's another part of it that makes it so fun is that not only are they super fast, but there's so many of them. Hmm. It's like overwhelming. When you first see a rush of these things coming, you're like, dude, there's no way I'm going to be able to kill all these. Like, they're totally going to get me. So he's up to that. And he also blows up if you shoot him. So if he gets near you or if he's, like, about to puke on your teammate, it's kind of a problem. You're like, well, I can shoot him. He's going to blow up and it's going to hurt my teammate worse. Whereas the puke's not going to hurt him, but it's going to potentially be even more disastrous by, you know, bringing in a whole bunch of other enemies to attack us when one of us is down and we still need to go pick him back up or one of us is over here healing. So then you start getting in scenarios like that. A second one's called a smoker, and he's got this super long tongue. I mean, a lot of people know all this, so, but, you know, again, I'll try to go through the basics quickly. And then with that tongue, he can grab you, choke you. If he's standing somewhere above you, it'll act like a noose and he could pull you up very slowly, of course, though. None of them will kill you instantly. They almost like all incapacitate one of you in some way, shape, or form. And that's to enhance the tension because every time one of the four, you know, the four becomes three or the three becomes two, it gets increasingly more difficult to the point where it's just like absolutely desperate to get your other guys back into the game. And combo them. Someone gets you with the tongue. Then the other guy goes and pukes. Might puke on you. There's this big thing called a tank. Just it's basically super strong. Rip up the environment and throw it. Ryan, thanks. and then the twist is that those can all be controlled by the CPU. But then another four human players can come in and play those roles. Another fourth zombie boss infected is called a hunter, and he has his own powers. So, instead of, you know, when people look at it, that it's not really complicated. It seems like it should be easy to explain, but people always assume zombie game. There's people playing zombies. They must have been players that were humans that got bit and turned into the zombie players. But rather, the humans are always on the human side, and the zombies are always on their side, and they come in and are basically trying to kill you. But they're individually weak. You shoot them a few times and they die. So
the zombies win?
The zombies can win, mm-hmm. especially if you're effective. And like in the case when I played, so now to get into the new stuff, this new level is called Cornfield. It starts off in a forest in the woods, absolutely, you know, creepy environment, stuff just, you know, coming out of everywhere. And you're constantly looking around with your flashlight, checking behind you. You'll hear a noise and they make great sounds. You'll hear the boomer spewing. spewing vomit. You'll hear him coming from somewhere and freak out, and they throw in the usual like Nightmare on Elm Street music or whatever it is. So you're going through, and eventually you go through this big cornfield, and you're on this farm, and you're trying to get to the farmhouse in the middle, and there's some barns and stuff. And if the zombies start attacking when you're in the corn, it's crazy because it's hard to see anything, and they're just rushing like right through you from all directions in this. So in the case when I played, we actually all ended up dying. We didn't make it. You're supposed to like hold out long enough for this truck to come and pick you up, and you all hop in the back of there, and it's got machine guns on it. And we started going down one by one. So the tank basically incapacitated one of us, starts beating the shit out of him. And then we're all freaking out, like, shoot the tank, get him off. We got to save this guy. But then the other guys exploit that opening. So a boomer comes up behind you when you're distracted shooting the tank, and he pukes on you. And then you've got 20 more zombies attacking you. And then the next thing, two of us are down. And then it's like you break and you freak out. And then it like really fell apart. So one of us ran into the barn where there's a minigun. And we're like, okay, I'm going to at least get on this. But then your back's exposed. And without someone else there to protect your back, then other guys came down and nailed the person on the gun. And then the last person was kind of running around in the house. And the zombies are, you know, pouring through the windows, leaping up to the second floor and coming in. Basically any place where there's an opening that they could fit through, they're just rushing in into this house. And the truck gets there, and he's running outside at full tilt. And they basically get him and take him down where he's like inches from the goal line. And like the last zombie gets him, and they're like, just, you know, people playing on that team are super excited because it is more difficult. It's far more difficult to do that, to win as a zombie player, to the extent that I was wondering if they're really just there to facilitate the enjoyment of the human players, you know, which seems kind of weird. Like,
well, that's why I asked if they
it's going
to
take like, yeah, yeah, is it going to take a special mentality? And I think it's definitely, they're not going to be for everyone. I haven't played from that side of the equation in a while. But it was definitely, I had more fun on the human side. But the thing is even though we lost there, it worked out in such a way that it was great. I mean, that particular thing, they couldn't have planned it better. And it would be like, here's the great horror movie that ends in disaster for everyone with the zombies ruling the earth. And it was like, it worked out like perfectly and just in that scenario. But I think it's going to be a great game that everyone's going to want to say, hey, let's just log in and play a campaign, because you can play each one separately and they're in different environments. Maybe you'll start messing with the infected later on. And because of the dynamic, you know, spawn-in system and the things that change it up every time, plus the element of having human players that are unknowns, and you're always wondering when you see a boss infected type, you're always trying to figure out from the behavior, is that a human or is that a CPU? And you, in most cases, you're going to be more fearful of it if it's human, because they'll trick you. Like, they'll run out and then, you know, they'll miss a pounce attack on purpose. And you're like, oh, that bastard's mine. I'll chase him. And you chase him around the corner and there's an ambush of the other dudes waiting for you, and they'll nail you. Sorry, there's so much going on. Okay, never mind. That's it. Whatever.
Well, we're at the time.
Yeah, I know we're done.
Yeah.
But sounds cool.
It's very cool. Yeah, it sounds really cool.
Yeah.
I had one more question, though, for you. Can you play it by yourself?
Yeah, you can. You can play it all against bots and offline if you want. It's just certainly a lot more fun.
So would you have bots on your side then, as humans, or was it just be you against them?
I don't know about that. I think maybe it can. I surprisingly, I didn't ask. That shows you how online-centric I am. Like, hey, of course I'll play it with other people.
Right. Sounds cool.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it. That's genuine. Like, you can hold me to this. If it comes out and it's a piece of shit, you could say, hey, he was on there giving the sales pitch. But I'm convinced that now it's been three times that I've played through entire campaigns, and
that was awesome. When I went,
extremely confident.
They had it there when I went for that TF2 story way back when, and it was awesome. It was totally cool. It was there was that Resident Evil game a while back where it was online, it was like four people like trying to survive a Resident Evil game, and I wanted that to be so good,
right?
And then it wasn't, and like this seems to be like what I wanted that game to be.
Yeah,
just like it's such a cool idea.
It's just super Twitch, you know, and that like that makes the difference.
Yeah, Resident Evil did not lend itself to that, obviously.
I don't get one thing. If you're on the zombie side and you die all the time, do you just respawn like instantly? Like,
no, they have a spawn timer.
Jeez.
So they're trying to figure out, that's part of the problem too, is if you die easily, like if you mess up and you just run out as one of these guys, they'll shoot you and only a few bullets will kill you. Mm-hmm. So it's always about like ambushes.
Well, that's Counter-Strike,
hit and run and stuff. Then. Yeah, for them, for those guys. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem with Counter-Strike, yeah, is it's brutal if you're new to the game. Mm-hmm. So they're putting in these options where you're still able to move around. Because here's the thing. When you play in that point of view, you can see through walls. You can see the silhouette of the human players. And that's what helps you ambush and equalize things. It's like, so you can kind of plan your attack in advance and know they're about to come through. That way you know right when to jump on them or something. And also letting you sort of move around and decide where I'm going to come in from and who I'm going to be, but just something. I definitely do believe they need to give you something to do. So if you get caught in the bad end of the loop right as it's rewinding, so instead of 5 seconds, you got to wait 20 seconds, which is an eternity when you see a bunch of humans running around having fun and you're sitting there, you know, waiting to spawn in as another fat boomer.
For your puke to regenerate.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Okay. I guess that is it for us.
Video games.
We're out of time.
For this week. We're out of time.
Video games.
Video games?
Video games.
What about them?
I don't know. Video games.
Okay. All right. Mr. Tourette's over here.
Video games.
Okay. Thanks for waiting for us all week this week, kids. Maybe we'll be back earlier next week. Huh? You'll get two in quick succession now. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, if we're on time. And so we'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.